Astonishing Grace to the Chief of All Fools by Michael Criswell. Chapter 7. The Dream Becomes a Nightmare. In spite of being badly taken advantage of by our contractor, Jennifer and I had finally got the doors open to our Orlando, Florida franchise of the Lord's Gym Health Club in the Waterford Lakes Town Center on August 22, 2001. However, because the builder had cheated us so badly, such that we had to give him all of our remaining capital in order for him to let us open, we opened without most of our equipment being in place. We didn't have any of the plate weights for the free weight area, no lockers in the bathrooms, no TVs, no stereo system, no smoothie bar, no group fitness equipment, no window tent on a space that had 40% external walls with windows, no exercise mats, no aerobics flooring, and no pro shop or retail products. Several members had canceled their memberships due to the delayed opening, but to me, it was a miracle that all of them didn't cancel. I couldn't start billing them for an entire month, so we had no money to finish anything. It was terribly embarrassing and terribly stressful, but most of our members were so very gracious with us, especially since nearly 600 of them had met Jennifer and I personally and knew we were just two young people doing this as a family business. After we opened, I met with an attorney who assured us we had been badly taken advantage of by this contractor, and he recommended we not make the first payment on the $61,000 promissory note to the contractor. I informed the builder, and he filed a lawsuit against us immediately. My attorneys told us we had a slam dunk case against the contractor and suggested that we get the district attorney involved. We filed a lawsuit attaching the landlord to the suit, alleging collusion between Paul, the leasing agent, and the contractor, who we asserted were part of a conspiracy to defraud us. We stated that this alleged collusion between them was preventing us from performing under the contract with the landlord. Then, just 20 days after we opened the already crippled club, we turn on our TVs the morning of September 11th, 2001, to see what looks like a world falling apart. Needless to say, our community and the world had much bigger problems to be worried about for the next several weeks than joining a gym. The gym itself looked like a ghost town for several days, until some members began showing up to work out just for stress relief. Then, just 2 weeks after September 11th, our first child, Tyler, was born. Now, we were brand new business owners and brand new parents all at the same time. Those are two of the most stressful things you can go through in life, and we were doing them both at the same time. I was so proud and amazed to be a father. I loved having Tyler in the gym with us, and he was such a wonderful distraction for me away from the crisis I was in the business. He slept in Jennifer's office in a crib, and when I could, I was carrying that boy all over the gym, showing him off to everyone. Tyler represented my greatest pride so far, and he was also going to become the source of my greatest fear. To this day, I have never felt as much fear as the day I accidentally left him in my truck. Your whole life, it has been just you, and then one day you come home from the hospital and you have a new person who is now totally dependent on you. They weren't there yesterday, but today they are. You haven't been used to taking someone with you everywhere you go. With my mind clearly on all the stress at the gym, one day I put Tyler in his car seat in the back of my Toyota 4Runner and took him with me to go to our house to get something to eat. By the time I got to our house, he was asleep, and I had completely forgotten he was in the vehicle. I don't remember what month this was, but in Florida it was still warm enough that 20 minutes later, when I left the house and opened my truck, I saw him in the back seat, and he was still asleep, but he was now sweaty. I absolutely panicked, screaming out loud, "Oh my God, help me! How could I do this? God, please help me! Please don't let him die! Please help us, Lord!" The adrenaline was coursing through my veins, and I was just begging God to help me as I raced back to the gym and pulled up to the back entrance. I ran straight into Jennifer's office and exclaimed, "Stop what you are doing right now and breastfeed this baby." To the praise of God Almighty, he ended up being completely fine. God was watching over him when I was not. This wasn't the first time I saw Tyler recover from something terrible. When his mother was about 7 months pregnant with Tyler, we were working in the pre-sale office, and a young man was practicing his roundhouse karate kicks while his parents signed up for a membership. Jennifer was walking through the room, and during one of his kicks, he spun around and kicked her right in the center of the belly with a full force blow to baby Tyler. She started screaming and was in so much pain as contractions began. We took her to the hospital, and everything ended up being just fine with both her and Tyler. There are no words to describe how rotten of a human being I felt like when I left my own baby son in the car. This happens, especially in Florida, so many times, and the child dies. I might have been only a few more minutes away from being someone who did that. God have mercy on those poor people who have accidentally done this. My God, what a horrifying experience. I can say no more except that we serve a Romans 8:28 God. That experience bonded me to Tyler in a big way and kept me from getting lost as his father in the midst of all the business chaos and stress. I began watching over him like a hawk. What at first seemed to be the terrible timing of a business and birth combination actually turned out to be a real blessing. No matter how bad things were going to get in the business, there was always the greater need and focus of taking care of a baby. I recognize how much of God's grace to me during the most difficult season of my life came through Tyler. Now, back to the gym story. Not only did we still not have the reserve money to finish the improvements to the club, but now we also couldn't pay our $16,000 a month rent while trying to pay the legal fees to defend ourselves against the contractor. As the leasing agent began demanding rent money, I told them I would pay them their rent money when they helped me to get my $121,000 back, which was stolen from me by the contractor they heavily influenced me to use. For a while, the leasing agent was able to stall any corporate action against us. But on January 9th, 2002, they filed a legal complaint against us and made demand for the rent monies owed. In response to the complaint, our attorney advised us to file a counterclaim against the landlord, in addition to naming them in the lawsuit we had against the contractor. The whole thing got so complicated that even the court was getting confused because of the closeness and similarities in this triangle of lawsuits. On November 15th, 2001, the contractor who I had purchased our building sign from walked in and asked me if I had heard about the trouble another tenant, the Birkenstock Shoe Store, was having with my builder. I met with the owner, and it turned out she was going through the same thing. Paul, our leasing agent, had gone out of his way to get her to do business with the same contractor, and they had done the exact same thing to her. She hired them on a lower estimate, and then they came to her halfway through the construction and told her it was going to be much more than they anticipated. Naturally, I kept most of what was going on to myself. I didn't want any of the members to panic, and I truly believed God was going to deliver us out of this whole confusing mess, no matter how bad it was looking. I kept most of my focus on running the business and trying to grow it and survive. There was one person, however, who knew all that I was going through. Throughout the whole construction and opening process, I had been mentored and encouraged by a fellow franchisee who became a dear sister to me. Her name was Margie Barboza. Margie and her husband owned the Lord's Gym franchise in Ocala, Florida, and they had opened their club 1 year before we opened ours in Orlando. As things were getting more and more difficult for me in the legal battles, I would call Margie or go visit her to get some advice and encouragement. During one visit, I just kept telling her how stressed out I was and how bleak the situation looked. I leaned over, pointed to the top of my head, and said, "Look at this, Margie. I'm so stressed out that I'm even losing my hair over this." She smiled in a smirky and confident kind of way, and then she got up and walked over to shut her office door. I had no idea why she was closing the door or what she was about to tell me. She shut her office door, and with that same smirk on her face, almost looking cocky now, she walked back over to her desk and sat down. She said, "Would you like to compare hair loss, my little brother?" I said, "What are you talking about, girl? You have tons of hair." I said, "Your skin's awfully orange from drinking all that carrot juice, but your hair looks just the same to me." Without saying another word, she flung her head forward and removed the hair from her head. I was completely shocked. She had been wearing a wig, and underneath of the wig was a matted down mess of what little hair she had left. She said, "This is what chemotherapy does to you, Michael. The breast cancer has traveled to my lymph nodes. I'm still believing God is going to heal me, but I'm also doing everything I can on my part." There was a mixture of tears and laughter as we began to realize we were spiritual blood brother and sister. We were both fighting the biggest out-of-our-control battle of our lives, and we were both calling upon the name of the Lord in faith to help us. We both knew and believed that God was not going to leave us or forsake us, and that He would restore and deliver us both for His glory. Although it was hard, we both kept clinging to Him, believing these to be just a test of our faith. As our respective battles continued to get worse, we encouraged each other and prayed with all our might. Margie was a woman of strong faith in God and belonged to a Word of Faith church. For her, there was no other possible outcome except for victory in Christ for both of us. Several times I heard Margie say to me with great conviction, "Michael, God is not going to bring us this far to just drop us like a hot potato. The devil is just trying to rob God of His glory, and we are not going to allow him to do that." Things were already tough for me battling this contractor, and then alleging collusion on the part of the shopping center leasing agent. But things were about to get even more complicated. This is around the time when I had that bizarre experience at church with the lady who said to me, "The Lord will be magnified and glorified through your obedience." And then she had just disappeared. That experience was quite bizarre, but I remember it left me feeling very encouraged, thinking that perhaps God was going to use my life to bring glory to His name. Perhaps God was going to save me out of this mess after all. Then came that Wednesday night in March of 2002. I was still in the club working in my office when Paul Norris, the president of LA Fitness, walked into our club and asked to speak to me. A very tall and shrewd-looking man, he sized me and my club up shockingly fast. He was able to tell me within minutes about how much I was billing each month in membership fees and how much profits I was earning from other services in the club. I knew he was not there to flatter me. He had come to inform me that LA Fitness had been in contract negotiations with the landlord for the past 18 months regarding purchasing a piece of property in the same shopping center right across the parking lot from us, and they were planning on building a 50,000 square foot health club. I was stunned by this news. I spoke with my attorney about this and discovered that the landlord's talks and negotiations with LA Fitness would put the landlord in direct violation of the implied covenant of good faith, fair dealing, and commercial reasonableness, which is in every Florida business contract. If my landlord allowed them to build another health club in the same shopping center, it would be a death blow to our business, preventing us from being able to perform our obligations under our lease agreement with the landlord. When questioned through my attorney, the landlord denied ever being in negotiations with LA Fitness. Nevertheless, Paul Norris told me they wanted my space to use as a pre-sale location and as a temporary gym for their members while they built their giant club. He straight away offered me $300,000 to buy us out, saying I could move to another location and start over. I was shocked at first that this was happening, but soon I became a bit excited, thinking maybe this might be an opportunity from the Lord for getting us out of this mess we were in with the builder and the shopping center. No, God was not going to just wipe all this mess away and make things comfortable again. It reminds me of Joseph making friends with the Pharaoh's cupbearer and baker by interpreting their dreams and then asking them to make sure they put in a good word for him with the Pharaoh so he could get out of prison. I'm confident that there was no way God was going to allow that to happen, because Joseph might have very well thought it was because of something he had done to save himself. No, God was going to give him 2 more years in that jail. And when he did come out, it was going to be a spectacular salvation of God. Father knew that there was still too much in my heart that was not like Christ, and too much in his way. God was not going to bring an easy escape that I might somehow think I had a role in. No, he was going to bring more pain and more discipline by an even hotter fire. Mark 9:49, everyone will be salted with fire. There was a pride deep in my heart that I was hiding from everyone I could, including myself. Father helped me to see how disgusting it was by revealing it to me. The gym was loved and appreciated and honored by many in the community. One day I walked into Panera Bread to get some lunch, and one of our members was there eating with some others when I walked in. He yelled out, "Mike, sir, hello." I walked over, and he jumped up and told everyone at the table that I was the owner of the Lord's gym around the corner, and he gave me much honor. Immediately, I feigned humility by saying something like this, "Oh, my friend, please stop. I'm just doing the work God asked me to do. There's no need to call me the owner of the gym." What a hypocrite. I was lying. Deep inside of me, my evil self nature was actually saying, "No, please do introduce me as the owner of the Lord's gym. I love hearing that. It feels so good to be honored before men that way." This is the truth, which I could never hide from Father. Even though I pretended to be humble and I faked it on the outside before people, hypocrite, and even though I tried to remain in denial to myself, I absolutely loved being honored and known as the owner of the Lord's gym. Indeed, there was a disgusting and hellish pride deep in my heart that I did not yet fully understand or see. My pride was augmented by my deep insecurity, which I had felt since childhood. I wanted so much to be seen as valuable and to measure up in the eyes of men. I wanted their praise desperately because I did not yet know God or have His praise. John 5:44. How can you believe if you accept praise from one another, yet make no effort to obtain the praise that comes from the only God? Left unchecked, a man's pride will send him to hell. Pride really seems to be the source of the devil's rebellion against God. It is a terrible and deeply ingrained evil that also lives in the hearts of man. But in God's infinite wisdom, love, and faithfulness, He seeks to expose it and purge it from the hearts of His elect. Man's pride tells him, "You are worthy, you are strong, you are capable, you are the boss, you are superior, you are unique, you are really something. Go your own way, build your own life, do your own will. You are the king, you are the ruler of your life." Man's pride separates him from the grace, mercy, and presence of his God, the one who made him for his own pleasure and glory. This is a hellish sin, and certainly the one God hates the most. Proverbs 11:2. When pride comes, then comes disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom. Proverbs 16:18. Pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. Proverbs 21:4. Haughty eyes and a proud heart, the lamp of the wicked, are sin. Isaiah 2:17. The arrogance of man will be brought low, and the pride of men humbled. The Lord alone will be exalted in that day. James 4:6. But He gives us more grace. That is why Scripture says, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. I don't believe Paul knew the trouble I was in with the landlord and the contractor already, but I told him that $300,000 would only leave me walking away barely breaking even and with not enough to start over. He asked me to get back to him with a fair price. I put the word out to a few other people that we may be interested in selling the club so I could get a better valuation of the business. Indeed, there was some interest. And I got excited about selling the club to another Christian rather than to a huge company like LA Fitness. On April 20th, 2002, we received a letter of intent to purchase the gym for $315,000 from a gentleman named Jeff. Unfortunately, this deal never went forward because the landlord created complications regarding him being able to take over the lease. They had leverage in this matter due to the pending litigation against us for backed rent. Knowing what I know now, I can see that they would have never allowed another gym to take over our space now that they wanted LA Fitness in there. We found out that LA was going to pay $2.7 million for the property rather than just leasing it. We would have to pay rent for 14 years before they could earn that kind of money from us. You can't catch a bigger fish until you get the smaller fish off your hook. Nothing was working out for me. I was still trying so hard to save myself and this business. I felt like God's glory was somehow attached to this building since it had His name on it. And if it failed, I felt it would be such a poor reflection on Him. Oh, how blind I was to think God's glory was attached to this building and my silly business. On the contrary, I see how the Father loves His children so much, even the foolish and simple-minded like me, so much so that He's even willing to allow us to fail miserably and bring public shame to His name by our ignorance. And yet, He doesn't throw us on the trash heap. He patiently allows us to try and fail multiple times until we finally break and come humbly before Him to learn how to walk according to His Spirit rather than our own good understanding and self-will. I was sticking close to Margie and praying with her through all of this. One afternoon, I was walking back and forth on a curb in front of our gym while speaking to her on the phone about all the crisis. She was trying so hard to encourage me to keep the faith. As soon as I clicked end on the phone, I heard these words in my spirit, almost as if they were audible. It is going to get worse before it gets better, but do not be afraid. I am in control, and this is about your character development. I could not doubt that those words came from the Spirit of the Lord as a warning, but they contradicted everything my faith was believing for. Over the next several months, the battle waged in the lawsuits, but I continued to sell memberships and move forward in all my might while calling it faith. As we continued to try to market and grow the business, we were slowly running out of money and getting further and further behind. Each time the leasing agent called me about rent, I told him I would pay them the rent when they helped me get back the $121,000 stolen from me by the contractor he insisted I use. In addition to trying to grow our business as fast as we could, now we were having to pay legal fees on three separate cases: the contractor, negotiations with LA Fitness, and now the landlord. Since we had still been unable to pay and refused to pay any rent until this was resolved with the contractor, on April 4th, 2002, the landlord scheduled a hearing with a judge in the Orange County Circuit Court to have us evicted from the property. Previous to the hearing, we filed a motion to stay the eviction and to consolidate the cases between the builder and the landlord. I remember driving to the courthouse, feeling like Abraham putting Isaac up on the altar. I felt like this gym was our first baby. We had been in labor with it for so long. I was afraid, but I was clinging to hope in God. Incredibly, the court honored our motion to stay and ordered that we were to pay into the court registry a sum of $32,000, an amount equal to 2 months' rent. The court also ordered us to both immediately engage in discovery to demonstrate the sufficient evidence to create an issue of fact as to whether or not the landlord had engaged in a conspiracy with the contractor against us. After the hearing was over, I stepped into the elevator where the court reporter disclosed her shock. She said, "I have never seen him do anything like that before. Do you realize that the judge just broke the law for you? The very law he wrote? You were supposed to escrow the entire amount of $120,000, not just 2 months' worth." I believe we had 20 days to make the escrow deposit of $32,000, or we would lose the case and be evicted by default. I maintained my faith in God, especially since I saw clearly what I believed was his favor in that courtroom. Even though it was only 2 months' rent the court was requiring, we still didn't have the money. Our money had been growing wings and flying away as fast as it came in. Negotiations with LA Fitness to buy us out was now my only hope of getting out of this mess, and it was still looking pretty good. They would buy out all my member contracts and allow everyone to continue working out there while they built the big club. As the squeeze came upon me, I became quite willing and now even anxious to take Mr. Norris's original offer of $300,000, which I still hoped would get us back close to zero. Zero was now looking good to me, as long as I knew that none of our members would lose their money. They would lose the Lord's gym, but they wouldn't be losing a gym. I kept hanging on every day, waiting for them to call and move forward on buying us out. I started dreaming and longing to be free from this battle and all the chaos and the stress. The landlord scheduled another hearing after the time passed for us to escrow the rent money, but Paul Norris and I were still moving forward in our talks, and it looked like we were close to making a deal. Then came 8 p.m., the night of May 21st, 2002. I was standing in Jennifer's office talking with her when the front desk told me that my attorney was on the phone. The words he spoke to me were the scariest words I had ever heard in my life. "Michael, I'm sorry. It's over. They have led you on. There is no deal with LA Fitness. They are not going to buy you out. They know you have run out of money. The landlord is going to appear before the judge tomorrow, and they are going to be issued a writ of possession of your property by 10 a.m. in the morning. You have until then to get everything you can out of that space. They will be there with the sheriff in the morning to change the locks, and they will rightfully own whatever you have left in there." Please, before I continue, let me pause and make sure you understand that I have no ill will toward LA Fitness at all. They are a for-profit business, not a Christian charity. Jesus himself said in Luke 16:15, "The people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light." What they did was very good for their business and shareholders, just not for me. Praise God, today I can laugh as I write this. They simply outplayed me, and God was pleased to allow it. Father was at work, not to make me a successful Christian gym owner, but to free me from my pride, my self-sufficiency, my own understanding, and from doing my own will. It was a terrifying experience, though. I hung up with my attorney, my knees buckled, and I collapsed in my chair, and the blood must have drained out of my face. I slammed my hand down on my desk, and I heard those same words again. "It is going to get worse before it gets better, but do not be afraid. I am in control, and this is about your character development." My first thought was, how in the world could this possibly get any worse than it is? I'm about to tell you how in the next chapter.